As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. You guys get an extra episode this week because this sport, college football, will not stop. It has been a 24 to 48 hours unlike any, I think you and I, we've been covering this sport a long time. I don't remember anything quite like this. To go from one stop the presses bombshell of Lincoln Riley to USC, to, I would say, an even bigger bombshell the next night. Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame for LSU. With Lincoln Riley, well, we got a little bit of a warning for one thing, but also, I mean, he was literally just answering a question the night before about another job we thought he might be up for. So I can't say that was completely shocking. This one left me speechless when the news came out.
I actually am less surprised by this one than I was Lincoln Riley. And I think the reason why I say that is because I didn't think USC would be able to pull it off. And quite honestly, if I thought Lincoln Riley was going anywhere, I thought it would be to the NFL. Whereas Brian Kelly, I've heard little rumblings like even Brian Kelly could have been a candidate at USC. The part that I get where you're coming from is, and I don't remember exactly how it was worded, but Brian Kelly did this like fairy godmother rant or whatever. Like, yes, it was in the wake of Mike Tomlin's definitive, you know, not only am I not going F you for even asking me it, you know, like that kind of thing. Whereas Brian Kelly went down that road, not quite as probably forceful as Jimbo Fisher did, but pretty much so. And
last week, by the way, not like 3 months ago.
Right. I think the part that has made this more wild is this aspect of it. And look, all of this, I feel like this has been like a 72-hour day for me, but like the thing that jumped out to me here is that from talking to people who are close to Brian Kelly, and that means people who are on his staff, they have had conversations with him where he had said, basically, I don't care what they're going to pay me. I'm not going there. And that sort
of thing. LSU specifically?
I believe so. And to that degree, and he doesn't want to leave here. And this seemed like it was more of a leverage play, not a leverage play, but something about leverage because, you know, he'd been really pushing and begging for certain things to have a chef for the football team, which most schools have, to have a formal training table, to have a new football facility being built, those kinds of things. And where I had heard like everything seemed to be a battle, and a lot of these things were done for the players. And yet, here it comes now. Notre Dame is maybe in one, if not two losses this weekend, whether it be Michigan or Alabama losing again, or possibly Oklahoma State, of Notre Dame being in the playoff. And so this guy who was pushing for seemingly benefits to benefit his team is bailing on his team when they could be a playoff team, and all we hear about from coaches is about culture and committed to them and all of these other things, and he is leaving this team behind. And so, you know, you have coaches who felt like they were, you know, assistants who felt like they're trying to talk recruits off a ledge. And then, you know, as I reported earlier Monday night, I just learned that Brian Kelly did a home visit today. And when he came out, it was basically the news had been getting out that he was expected to leave to go to LSU. I mean, it's a bad, bad look for him. And I think that aspect of the wild nature of this, I think, probably makes this even more surreal probably than just Lincoln, USC landing Lincoln.
Yeah, look, every time a coach leaves a big name program, it's always awkward. There's no good way to do it. The fan base that's left, I mean, you know, we'll get to Lincoln Riley here in a little bit, but Oklahoma fans who were, you know, rooting for this guy two nights ago, he is now completely dead to them. But Brian Kelly seems to do it in a particularly brazen way. When he left Cincinnati for Notre Dame, and by the way, that wasn't a out of nowhere thing. That was,
he was the obvious, candidate. Right?
The rumor had been out there for a week. Finally got through the last game. Cincinnati wasn't going to a playoff, but they were an undefeated team going to a BCS Bowl, which was a really big deal for that program at the time.
It was a Sugar Bowl, right?
Sugar Bowl to play Tim Tebow, and he left. And kind of like this, I felt like that felt unprecedented. You know, a coach leaving his team before the low-level bowl down there. Okay, that's okay, but like before a BCS game? And now we're talking possibly, don't know for sure, that like you said, it's not an unrealistic scenario. I mean, I don't think Alabama's going to get it in as a two-loss team at this point. So all you need is Baylor to beat Oklahoma State, or Cincinnati loses to Houston, or Michigan loses to Iowa. Any of those three, Notre Dame's in the playoff probably, with an interim coach? That's insane.
Could you imagine if Notre Dame, which has gotten blown out on big stages close to the playoff, and somehow they get in and they even win one game in the playoff, much less win two? That might be, you know, it's weird, and I don't know if Notre Dame typically is a school that obviously has a huge fan base, but also has a lot of people who just are inclined to root against them. I suspect there'd be a lot of people rooting for Notre Dame because
screw
of
it to Brian Kelly. I may
be wrong. Because, well, I don't know, just because I think, you know, this is the players really get jerked around here more than anything else, you know, and so I think there's going to be a lot of people who probably will be rooting for them. Now, this may be a moot point. They may not get into the playoff anyway, but I just think the aspect of like I remember thinking, and this came up actually today at the USC, it didn't come out the press conference, but it came up with a conversation I had to somebody where, you know, that Bedlam game was really close and back and forth. If Lincoln Riley's team, Oklahoma, won, Lincoln Riley's probably not the head coach at USC, or he's definitely not the head coach right now. You know, Matt Campbell might be the head coach at USC right now. So it's kind of crazy how it plays this, you know, plays out like this, but man, Notre Dame and Brian Kelly, it's just like, and then, you know, like I think our colleagues, both Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna, had the text message that Brian Kelly basically sent them. And at one point I got a text from a head coach I know who basically was like, did he really break up with them over text? And I wrote back, you know, I kind of included the tweet from, I think it was Fortuna. And he was like, man, this is smacks of Todd Graham. And I was like, those are four words no coach ever wants to be associated with.
I mean, we could do, you know, we did that that coaching carousel series a couple months ago. We could have done a whole one just on messy exits. Tommy Tuberville
at the 50-yard line, steakhouse.
Leaving out the back door of a recruiting dinner. I mean, there's been some unbelievably awkward ones. This one is unique because of that playoff scenario. You said, going back to, you said you weren't as shocked about this. If you had told me, you know, 2 weeks ago that Brian Kelly was going to leave Notre Dame for USC, that kind of made sense to me. For whatever reason, I'm having a very hard time picturing Brian Kelly in an LSU visor at Tiger Stadium facing off against Nick Saban or Jimbo Fisher or Lane Kiffin or whoever, he look, he's a tremendous coach. He's won everywhere he's been. So I'm not going to, there's no reason to think he couldn't win at LSU. It just seems it is not the place I would have envisioned in terms of what, you know, you would, you refer to as cultural fit. That being said, as somebody pointed out, maybe Dan Wetzel, Ed Orgeron was the definitive cultural fit, and he ain't firing him. So sometimes that concept is a little bit overrated. Are you a good coach or are you not?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, like, this thing started to percolate around, I think around lunchtime our time, or maybe a little earlier, and, you know, we have good resources on this, so I'm, you know, connected with Brody Miller, our LSU writer, and Pete Sampson, our Notre Dame writer, and we're going back and forth about this, and we're talking to different people, and it becomes apparent they are really going hard after Brian Kelly, and I think the discussions we were having, and as this thing started to unfold further, you know, I'm in the car with Leinart going to the USC press conference, and, you know, he's driving, and I'm just like, I'm talking to Pete Sampson, and I'm keep thinking in my head, this is a poker game where one guy has a hand where he does not want to have to play it. It's almost like, don't make me take this job kind of thing. And apparently, you know, it just felt like the relationship between Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD, and Brian Kelly had really gotten frosty and deteriorated. And I think, and I don't want to go too far down, because I think Pete Sampson's going to have a heck of a story he's going to put together, and I don't want to kind of spill some of the beans in that.
It just seems from afar like that Jack Swarbrick, Brian Kelly wanted X, Y, and Z. Jack Swarbrick thought he was calling his bluff, and it turned out he wasn't bluffing.
Well, I don't even know if it was, I think it's that, but I think there was some of it where Notre Dame does not operate like a typical college football powerhouse when it comes to ramping up and getting things signed off on and those kinds of things, for better or worse. In this case, it's probably much for worse. And, you know, I think it's going to be no matter what, you weren't going to be able to put the toothpaste back in the tube from this. And so, yeah, it's a messy, messy exit. I'll ask you this question. This is, and I don't want you to say the same thing, but like, if you had to pick one, who got the better hire, USC or LSU?
Well, they're both really good hires. it's hard to break that tie. I'm going to go USC because I feel like for all the reasons that have now been, I mean, having watched that press conference and talked about it ad nauseum, there's a lot of things that make sense about Lincoln Riley coaching in Southern California. I think he's going to recruit the heck out of that place. Brian Kelly in the SEC, I have I'm having a really trouble imagining it. I know I should just say, look, the guy has had an absolutely tremendous run.
It worked
run.
For Nick Saban
name.
And Baton.
He's won everywhere
it
he's been. He'll win at LSU. But, you know, it's the SEC West. It's not the Pac-12 South.
Nick Saban, not exactly from the Deep South.
Now, no, plenty West of people Virginia, not from the South have gone in there and won.
Les Miles from Ohio. So,
do you think deep down, though, and look, he'll never say this publicly, I don't think, but clearly Brian Kelly wants to win a national championship. He talked about doing it at Notre Dame. You know, that was always the stated goal. And if anything, the recruiting's gotten better and better. But I wonder if deep down he realized, look, the same thing, every time they play Alabama in the playoff or you know, Clemson, they get their butts kicked. Because as well as they recruit, like you said, it's not a football powerhouse. There are certain guys you can't take at Notre Dame. There's guys that you can't stash away. And you know what I mean? Like, there's limitations there. And does he just feel like, you know, I could keep doing the same thing here over and over. We could go 11-1. Maybe we make the playoff. Maybe we don't. I'm never actually going to win a national title, no matter how hard I try. But I can definitely win one at LSU.
I don't know. I'm excited to see how this plays out.
So you're excited to see how this plays out. How are you feeling about... I get this. I think this has been great. This coaching carousel, this insane coaching carousel, has been great for business. It's been great for content. Not so sure it's great for college football. The amount of money that is now being thrown at coaches, and I'm sure I said the same thing when the first coach made $4 million or $5 million, but
we've cracked double digits
and we've cracked it. It's not Nick Saban who's cracking it.
Mel almost cracked it after one winning season.
Well, you know, it's Mel Tucker when they announced that deal, and I was like, I wonder where that ranks, not just in college football, but in all of sports. And that list does exist. And it was like, oh my gosh, $9.5 million is exactly what Steve Kerr makes. Mel Tucker, who's 10 win season, he's going to go to a New Year's Six Bowl. Congratulations on that. Makes the same salary as a guy who's won 3 NBA championships. You know, as a guy who coaches Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, is what this guy's making to coach college athletes. It's not normal. There's no other way to put it. This, something's broken here. But I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle.
No, and I think our friend Pat Forty, I saw this on Twitter. I think he tweeted it out, or maybe it was from a column he wrote, was talking about, you know, and this isn't that far. We're not far removed from employees getting furloughed and sports getting cut, and ADs talking about how they don't have money, and they do have money, right? So, and look, we're going to get into soon, very soon, like the CFP and an expansion and TV contracts and money. And I don't know, like what you said before about how this is good for business. And when you mean by good for business, you mean, look, it's certainly good
people
for
people are reading the Athletic. People are reading the Athletic about
it. Yeah, no, I get it. And people are talking about college sports in ways that probably, in ways that honestly they talk about NFL free agency.
Absolutely.
And NBA free agency and those kinds of things. And look, you are a bigger fan of realignment chatter than I am, but that's another thing that fits in that category. This is just coach realignment, you know, and
they're all related. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC is not, you can kind of draw a line from that to Brian Kelly wanting to go coach in the SEC. Or Michigan State feeling like, you know what, we've got a guy who could take us to an expanded college football playoff. We need to lock him down. It's a professional sport. There's no other way around. It's a professional sport where the players don't make a salary. And everybody, that tension has existed for a long time, but it's reached a breaking point. And you know, NIL is kind of a stopgap. NIL is like, okay, well, you can't say we don't let the athletes make money anymore. They're allowed to make money. Yes, that is true, but they can't make anywhere near the kind of money that the coaches are making to coach them. And, you know, not to get too deep and philosophical here, but, you know, I've written for years, I think college football will eventually break off into its own thing, separate from the NCAA, maybe even separate from the conferences as we know them right now. And stuff like this is why, you know. LSU hiring away. Think about if this were the NFL, and as soon as a team got eliminated from the playoffs and fired their coach, they went and hired the coach of somebody who is in the playoffs or who is about to make the playoffs. It's insane. And by the way, there's a meeting literally this week where they may rubber stamp the 12-team playoff. If this were a 12-team playoff, we wouldn't just be talking about one team's coach possibly being pushed away. You might have 3 or 4 of the 12 teams' coaches getting poached away, and that's not healthy. So, you know, there's nothing that can be done about it the way college sports is currently constituted, because each conference is its own entity. You can't, you know, the NFL has a rule that you can't interview another team's coach until after their season's over. There's no way to implement a rule like that in college football unless the top 25, 30, whatever it is, programs go and form their own equivalent of the NFL.
That was a pretty good little rant. It wasn't a rant, but have you written this before and I haven't read it? Because this was actually very well
thought
out. It was
all off the top of my head, although I have written about the
This felt a little bit like, do you remember the scene in Old School where Will Ferrell blacks out and just kind of and wins the
wins the debate,
poetry contest? Yeah,
that's kind I guess I'm a little bit fired up. I mean, I have written a lot about the notion of a Premier League and how I think that's coming at some point. Mostly when I talked about that, I was talking more about TV contracts. But, you know.
No, there's a lot of factors that you actually outlined that are colliding at once, that whether it's an early signing period, I didn't think about the 12-team potential playoff, but how that expands it, how there is a lot of independent contractors in the sport, essentially. You have all sorts of poaching going on. It's happening, you know, obviously with recruiting, there's like, it feels like there are no more barriers. And I'm not like, what I don't feel is, like, I'm not woe is the sport or anything like that. Because I sometimes I feel like I look at this and I am too close to it and I'm too much in the weeds of, you know, whatever is about to happen, that I'm probably not, don't have a 50,000 foot view to look at it. I mean, I feel like the games are still going to be great and they're still going to be the games, but there's a lot of stuff where you look at it and go, man, this, like, just the aspect of Brian Kelly, like, I think he's a really good coach, one of the probably 6 or 8 best coaches in college football.
I don't think you could find had his 6 to put in front of him.
Maybe, I think he's probably
right behind Saban and Dabo.
Yeah, I might, I don't know, I might put, depending on what happens, I might put Kirby Smart and Lincoln Riley above him. I don't know. But he's definitely, you know, he's a consistent winner with a good track record. He only had that one stumble, you know, whatever it was, and he seemed to learn from it. So all those things. But what I'm, guess I'm, what I'm getting at is, Spencer Hall once had a, what I thought was a very clever line that he had, he tweeted out, where game day must have been at a Notre Dame game or something, because Brian Kelly got off the bus and he had kind of on a jacket, and in Brian, and Spencer's line was, he looks like the manager of a wrestling villain. And, you know, which was like a very pithy way of kind of maybe summing up maybe a smugness, or I don't know what it was. But I think by and large, you know, Brian Kelly's reputation has been, you know, in the last 5 years, 6 years, has been pretty good. He does, you know, he's done a bunch of good work off the field and everything like that. But I think this, and, you know, this day was not a good day. I know he's, you know, it's weird because you're going on to make a big career move to potentially win it, go to a place where you think you can win a national title. But man, this exit is, it's so messy. You know, it feels like it's kind of unique, because usually guys leave and the timing of how they announce it is one thing. But this was like, you know, like 2 days ago, there was a, you know, the Dan Wolkin column I read, and there was a lot of stuff that kind of resonated, but it was like, I don't know, 2 days ago, he's lobbying for why they deserve to be in the playoff. And then, you know, 48 hours later, he is fleeing the place after going to do an in-home visit.
I mean, it's as clunky as it gets. Not to defend Brian Kelly, but more to play devil's advocate a little bit. We're all speculating on why he's going. You had some good intel about the friction there, but if somebody comes along and offers you a job you really want in any other industry, if somebody came along and offered
a
job,
it is different, Stu. Here's why it's different. Like, because I saw somebody in the comments, I think, to Wolkin say, yeah, if somebody offered you a 50% raise or X amount of dollars more, the thing is, and maybe I'm looking at this too literally, but you, Dan Wolkin, you know, Pat Forty, whoever, you know, people do not, you know, maybe our readers commit to you, you're subscribing to the, but it's not like 18-year-olds put their like lives and careers in your hands and commit to you, and you sell them on a vision of, hey, we're gonna, like, I think if he left after the season, and maybe if it was just, hey, you're gonna go play in
but
the Blockbuster Bowl,
right? Like, everything you're saying is right. Like, you're the captain of the ship.
He chose not to.
I'm saying that, you know, whatever choice he made or didn't make, the fact that he had to make that choice is a byproduct of a really broken system. Like, Scott Woodward probably shouldn't be allowed to offer the sitting coach of a team that might be about the playoff a $100 million contract before a season's over. But he's allowed to, and he did it. And, you know, I think there's been some unwritten rules along the way that are now no longer rules. We, on this very podcast, I want to say last week, right before Thanksgiving, we did a kind of a setting up the coaching carousel. And we talked about Luke Fickell, and we both agreed, well, if his team makes the playoff, he's not going to be able to go anywhere.
He's off limits, yeah.
Well, Brian Kelly just said that's not a rule, you know?
I think what's a little different to me, Stu, is Luke Fickell's in the top four or top five. And maybe I think if Notre Dame was one spot higher, and we don't know where they're going to come out tomorrow. I mean, where are they going to be? They may be fifth, right? Because Ohio State, yeah. If they were fourth, would it be that much more egregious?
Oh, if they were like, we control our destiny, we're going to the playoff, and he's still left? Like, maybe Brian Kelly just doesn't think they're going to make it. I don't know.
But let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
So Georgia beats Alabama, hardly far-fetched at this point. Then Alabama's out of the top four.
Doesn't necessarily mean they'd stay that they'd fall behind Notre Dame. Doesn't automatically mean. Remember, Notre Dame doesn't have a chance to play its way in this weekend, so they just really need.
No, but you don't have Oklahoma. Where is Oklahoma State in this discussion? I think.
Well, we're gonna find out Tuesday night. Is Oklahoma State would pass Notre Dame for sure if they win this week and win the Big 12, but will they be ahead of them in the poll that comes out Tuesday? I don't know.
So thinking is they need Georgia to win, which isn't
probably
far-fetched.
Need them to and win. Probably handily. Need.
I don't know about that, but maybe. But they need Georgia to win, and they need one of these two things to happen: Michigan to lose to Iowa, or Baylor to beat,
or Oklahoma Houston State, to beat Cincinnati. Right?
Yeah, or Houston to beat. Yes, thank you.
Any one of those things happens, they could be in, and. So playing this out, so, I mean, we all think that Notre Dame might want Luke Fickell as the coach now, right? We know Luke Fickell, that's a job that we think he would want, and
how can you leave?
That's my next question. If Notre Dame decides Luke Fickell is their guy, and let's say they wait till after this, they at least wait till after this weekend, and he makes the playoff, and Notre Dame says, hey, Luke Fickell, here we're willing to offer you, you know, here's your 10-year, $100 million contract to come to Notre Dame. The catch is you can't stay for the we need you now. It's early signing day. You can't stay at Cincinnati for another month.
Now, is all this is solely because of the early signing period?
Yeah, well, I think one thing I would say is, you know, when we said, I don't know how you put the genie back in the bottle, they may have to scrap early signing day at this point. It was well-intentioned. There was a good reason to do it, which was, you know, these coaches were spending December and January crisscrossing the country to visit their committed recruits to make sure they didn't flip. So just let them sign. That was the reasoning for it. But look at the effect it's having on the coaching world.
Or they push it back into after the playoff.
Push it. Well, at that point, you might as well be back to having your one signing day. But that's what's driving all this. I mean, this is, back in the day. Do you remember when Charlie Weiss got the Notre Dame job and stayed with the Patriots through the Super Bowl? He was introduced as Notre Dame's head coach in probably December, I want to say, or maybe early January, after they fired Tyron Willingham. And then he went back and was with the Patriots for the next month. I remember, actually, he held his signing day press conference from the Super Bowl. So think about that. And now think about where we are now, where it's not only can you not do that, you have to quit on your team before the season's over because we need you signing days in 2 weeks and we need you. You know, Lincoln Riley was introduced at a press conference Monday. He was at a recruit's home Monday night. Two nights ago, he was coaching for the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We feel like we're in uncharted waters.
What is your read on where Notre Dame goes next?
I would guess it's one of three people. I would guess it's Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell, or there's a chance they could promote from within with Marcus Freeman. I think the question is going to be, this will be an interesting little audition for sort of for Marcus Freeman, because, and look, there's a possibility they could name Brian Poley in the interim because he's actually had head coaching experience. But let's say, I think it's really, those are the three main candidates. And what's ironic, I think ironic is maybe not the best way to put it, but the way things played out, Matt Campbell, I think, had a real good shot to be the USC head coach. Lincoln Riley ends up jumping at their chance. Matt Campbell's stuff gets canceled. Then you get this, the second curveball of two big curveballs, you know, going from Riley and then Brian Kelly leaving. Matt Campbell's sitting out there where timing might behoove him, where he's now, he could be coaching against Lincoln Riley for the job that he, you know, didn't get. And from the timing aspect, I don't know how Luke Fickell, unless they lose, I don't know how he could bail out of that. If I'm Notre Dame, I feel like they have basically four choices that are apparent. Those three coaches, and one of them is like, wait. I mean, you just wait till the playoff, and that means you're going for Luke Fickell. So it's really, to me, it's Campbell, Freeman, wait. And if it's wait, that means you're probably going after, you know, going after him, not unless you're Notre Dame and you think you're going
to. What about, do you think, and it's crazy to be talking about this, but, you know, it's not unusual for a school to hire somebody's coordinator, and he comes and he holds.
So you're thinking that.
And he holds his press conference, and he goes.
You're thinking that Notre Dame, if they make the playoff, is going to hire interim head coach Ed Orgeron to come in.
You missed that totally. No, I'm saying, would it be kosher for Notre Dame to announce the playoff rankings get unveiled? Cincinnati, undefeated Cincinnati, is going to the playoff. Notre Dame's going to the Fiesta Bowl or whatever. And then 2 days later, Notre Dame announces that Luke Fickell is going to be their next head coach, but he's staying with the Bearcats through the playoff.
No, because, like, here's the problem with that. Like, I think, yeah, you can have him, you can announce him. I think the issue is you're leaving us.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, that happens with coordinators all the time, you know? Kirby Smart,
yeah, they're coordinators,
Jeremy Pruitt, coach. I'm forgetting some obvious ones off the top of my head. That happens, you know, I can remember actually.
Lane Kiffin.
Lane Kiffin, although he screwed that up. I can actually remember going all the way back to when Dan Mullen was Urban Meyer's OC and got the Mississippi State job. I remember at the media day before the national title game, him showing off to us how he had two cell phones now, his Florida phone and his Mississippi State phone. You wouldn't be able to do that with Lincoln Riley, but I don't know. Is there some sort of like, well, it's a group of five coach and they're just thrilled to be in the playoffs, so they're not going to necessarily send him packing.
Why, you know, but like, I think the whole aspect of you're leaving us, you're like, it's not like that job doesn't
Scott
exist.
Frost coached UCF in the Peach Bowl, whatever bowl, right? And they won. I don't know. I realize the playoff's different than a bowl game.
The playoff is different. And the aspect of you're like, I remembered Jeremy Pruitt when he was at Alabama. I remember talking about Tennessee and everything like that. And you're talking about how you're going to do it on your own time. It's just different. You're the head coach of a national title team. The last thing, you don't need any one more distraction. I think that's a disservice to your team.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, we haven't even started to touch on Lincoln Riley, and I do want to go there because you were at the press conference at the Coliseum. I watched it on TV. They really went all out, man. They had billboards of him in the background. Lincoln Riley himself kept kind of looking. He seemed kind of in awe of the... It's funny, I've covered a lot of games from that press box, so have you. And usually when I look out, I'm like, oh, it's really smoggy in LA today. Lincoln Riley was looking at it like the Eiffel Tower was behind him. Like, look at this. You know how sometimes you know, during a live event like that or something, you send a tweet and you move on and you don't even notice that until much later that one of your tweets kind of went viral. I tweeted out a lot of quotes from that press conference, but the one I tweeted out that like Oklahoma fans just jumped on and had a field day with was when he described the timeline of how the job came together. Said he found out about the USC was interested late Saturday night, early Sunday after Bedlam. Got a couple hours sleep, got up, hopped on a Zoom call with USC that morning, and next thing you know, he's their coach. Nobody seemed to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people are going to be skeptical that such a big career move could happen like that. I mean, I saw Alex Grinch, who was one of the coaches who's come to USC with him, the new defensive coordinator, and he talked about, I think it was, he got a call from his agent at, I don't know, I think he said it was 3:30 Central time in the morning. I mean, I guess, look at it this way. I mean, at that point, it's like, okay, if somebody's calling me at this time and this person's calling, they must have something serious. And I think that thing just kind of really escalated from there.
I think it could be true that, you know, two things can simultaneously be true. Lincoln Riley may be telling the truth that he himself didn't talk to USC until after that game. But Lincoln Riley,
I'm guessing his representative. He's got an agent.
USC can talk to his agent as much as they want, set the table so that as soon as the season ends, and by the way, like you said, it could have lasted another week, that they're ready to move and they're ready to pounce. And I know Mike Bone at that press conference was not shy about
the hyperbole
and kind of just really patting himself and his team on the back for changing, what did he say, changing the dynamics of college football forever or something. But he gave a name drop to Brandon Sosna, his very young number two man who came with him from Cincinnati, and basically said he was the architect of the search and he's the reason they were able to pull this off. And I don't know, you were there. I'm talking too much. Tell us about the press conference.
You know, I think for USC, it is a proud program that has gotten its head slammed against the wall like 94 different ways over the past few years. So I think this was a chance for them to say, hey, dust themselves off and feel good. And I think for a lot of them, you know, I think there was a little bit of like, they could have sigh a relief. Hey, we didn't screw this up. See, we didn't get this wrong, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, look, good for them. It's good. It's good for the Pac-12. It's certainly good for them. But I think that, you know, listening to them, I think it was a first window for some people to see Carol Folt, the president there. Because remember, since she took over, it's like they've had like one scandal after another. That wasn't on her watch. It was stuff she inherited. But I think even for Mike Bone, this was a chance for people to, you know, because I mean, they went through this thing. They thanked Dante Williams. They thanked Rick Caruso, who's basically the guy who kind of makes things happen around USC. And it was like, then I just thought it was very cathartic for them, right? And I think Lincoln Riley, you had like two different things going on. You had one was the USC leadership and the USC infrastructure. You had a bunch of, you know, like Sanchez was there and Leinart was obviously there. And there was like a handful of former star players and a lot of people from their board, and they had the band and they had the cheerleaders or the song girls. But then there was the Lincoln Riley piece where it's like, okay, here I am, you know, and it's like, I'm at USC now and my wife and little girls are out here and I've got some of my old / new coaches are with me. And so I think that part felt really different. Like, it was almost like USC could have had this, you know, if they didn't have Lincoln Riley and just talk about the hire itself. But I think the fact that it was the Lincoln Riley piece of it is like, okay, how are you going to get this done? How do you fix this? You know, kind of thing. And I'm not saying I don't think he knows what he's getting into, but I think right now this is the total honeymoon day. And I feel like USC for the first time had a chance to show off a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and they did.
For the last couple of years, I was like, I don't even know how many people, because some of this happened, you know, when the shutdown with COVID, like there was a massive renovation to the Coliseum. You know, it's been, you know, upgraded everything. Oh, there's a lot of really positive things about it. And I feel like this was an opportunity for USC to puff out its chest when USC really has not had any chance to do that in a long time.
Everybody's speculating, why did he do that? Why did Lincoln Riley go to USC? Is he scared to be in the SEC? Et cetera, et cetera. Just reading his body language at that thing, he seems awestruck by USC and LA. And I know he spent a lot of time out there recruiting. And it's interesting because I think back to when LSU fired Ogeron that week, lead of my mailbag, top question, which is the better job, USC or LSU? And I said, I think it's LSU, but they're so different that, you know, two coaches may give two different answers because some people may not want anything to do with a city like LA and the traffic and the smog and blah, 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 and the really, really expensive housing, and would be much more comfortable in an SEC town. And some people may be the exact opposite. And Lincoln Riley looked like somebody who thinks it's just really cool to move his family to LA. He was on Scott Van Pelt's show Monday night and referred to it as, you know, starting a new chapter. It was time to start a new chapter. And this is the place it made sense to do it.
Yeah, he said at one point about, like, I thought this was actually he's a cool little perspective. He was like, you know, I want my daughters and my family to experience very different things. And Lincoln and his wife, Caitlin, are from, like, he's from Muleshoe, Texas, and she's from a neighboring small town, right? And so, you know, they, I think after Tech, they moved to Greenville, North Carolina, you know, to be at East Carolina with Ruffin McNeil. And then from there, he ended up in Norman. And I think this is going to be a very different lifestyle for them, but I think he seems to really embrace it. And I think you're right on that. Like, look, to me, you know, whether USC or LSU is the better job, you know, I don't think anybody was having that question 10 years ago, right? You know, so, and nobody was having that question 20 years ago. It's not to say LSU wasn't a good job, but like, when, I don't even know who was the equivalent of DiNardo when DiNardo was at LSU, if it was Ted Tolner or if it was Paul Hackett. I guess it was probably Paul Hackett. I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't think that, like, people would have said, oh yeah, you know, LSU at this is the better job.
LSU, when I was growing up, was not a factor at all. I mean, LSU, the first time I remember LSU being kind of relevant was that they had Kevin Falk. Right, he was a great player, All-American, but it wasn't like they were competing for the national title. The LSU, as you know it today, started when Saban got there, which in the grand scheme of things was 20 years ago. Whereas USC, you can go all the way back to the early days of college football. They've been a national presence. Now, I would say in today's sport and the way college football is today, LSU is better set up for success because they're in the SEC, because they make SEC money, because they're the only show in that state, college football-wise. But you're also in a much, much tougher competitive environment, and it's only going to get tougher. So I can absolutely see why it would be appealing to the coach of Oklahoma to, knowing that you're about to go be in the SEC West or whatever the new alignment's going to be, to rather be out there at USC, which, when it's got the right coach, can dominate the Pac-12. I don't think Oregon's going to, you know, as long as Cristobal's there, I don't think Oregon's going to, like, part, you know, seas are going to part for USC and Lincoln Riley. Like, that could be a really competitive rivalry. But it makes sense. Now, that being said, I'm not sure I've ever seen a coach leave a program and have that program immediately just go into a complete chaos and free fall. The only thing I can compare it to is when James Franklin left Vanderbilt for Penn State and brought, like, half his recruiting class with him, which was considered kind of taboo at the time. Trace McSorley was one of the commits that came with him, turned out to be pretty important for Penn State. You know, Lincoln Riley's leaving. He's bringing half the staff with him, including his strength coach. Spencer Rattler entered the transfer portal today. Now, that's entirely surprising. Jordan Hazelwood entered the transfer portal. And all the top recruits from Southern California are decommitting, and we're all assuming they're going to follow him to USC.
Yeah, and Bob's got to hold down the fort, it seems like, while there's a search. So, you know,
Bob Stoops is out recruiting for Oklahoma right now. It's like good old days.
Yeah, look, Bob loves the program. Bob loves it there. Bob's son plays there, so I think there's a lot of connections. Bob's authentic, so this is like...
I hadn't thought of that, actually. That's going to be really cool. He's going to get to coach Drake in a bowl game.
Yeah, and Isaac, the other twin, I think is a student assistant there. So
that part of it is really cool. I covered the Rose Bowl where Barry Alvarez came back and coached Wisconsin because Bielema had left. Like, good for Bob. That'll be fun. But, you know, that program, I mean, those fans... The only thing I can compare it to is that when Saban left LSU and then came back to Alabama like 2 years later, I can remember going to one of their games where there were Nick Saban shirts everywhere. He was just dead to them. This feels like that, and maybe even worse. They literally one night he's coaching them for a shot at the Big 12 title and possibly playoff berth. And, you know, the next night he's gone, and the night after that he's in recruits' homes and with a USC shirt and a fight and doing the fight on sign. They're just, Oklahoma fans are just beside themselves right now. They're furious, and I can't say I blame them.
Yeah, he was there 5 years. He had a ton of success, and then that was it. I think it would be much easier if he had just said, hey, I'm going to be the next coach of the Dallas Cowboys or whatnot. So
yeah, people understand when a coach goes to the NFL. They do not like it when a coach goes to another college program that they consider to be, you know, not. I mean, Lincoln Riley said in that press conference at one point, something like, you know, that no college program has better, more history and tradition than this place. And it was almost like you might as well have just taken a dagger and stuck it straight in Joe Castiglione's heart, because Oklahoma has plenty of tradition and history.
Yeah, you don't see the major-to-major move. Like Dan Mullen left from Mississippi State to Florida. But I don't think anybody looked at that and goes, yeah, he had a good job and you left it for this place, you know, kind of thing. I don't know how pissed off Mississippi State fans are about that or were. I don't remember, but you don't usually see a ton of...
No, you know, not blue blood to blue blood, and we've had two of them in 2 days.
I mean, what did you, like, I mean...
Jimbo Fisher left Florida State for Texas A&M, but I think things had gone bad by the end, so I don't know that they necessarily felt
Bielema, burned by that. Bielema left Wisconsin for Arkansas. I don't think exactly they loved him for that.
Crazy, this one's crazy now, but, it was... extenuating. So Dennis Franchione left Alabama for Texas A&M, which was, if that happened today, it was kind of stunning, but Alabama was on probation from the Albert Means thing. Like, it actually made sense that he was leaving Alabama for A&M, but obviously Alabama fans were not pleased with it. Nobody's ever pleased when their coach leaves for another school.
Well, what's weird is, like, I remember, and I should remember this better because I wrote about it for a book, but like, when Dennis Erickson left Washington State for Miami, I think, I don't know how they felt about him in Pullman, but they hated him in Miami, right, when he first got there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think they thought he belonged, you know, because they had such affinity for Jimmy Johnson, and who are these guys coming in with their parkas and everything like that. And so that was like the flip side of it. But, yeah, this is...
I've got Northwestern friends who, when Gary Barnett left for Colorado, like, they never forgave him. And it's like, guys, he took them to the Rose Bowl. Like, the greatest season in school history is you owe it to him. And it's like, ah, he left in the middle of the night, sent an email, blah, blah, blah. People just, you know, and I get it. I don't want to sound like I'm being snarky about this.
No, believe me.
It's your school.
I understand.
You love your school. And I think people feel betrayed because they think the coach should have that same level of loyalty, right, that you do as a fan. But they don't. It's a job to them.
Who has more disdain? Some of your friends do for Gary Barnett leaving, or you do for Milt McCall for staying?
Maybe they've got bigger problems than Mick McCall now. They may have two coordinators they need to replace. Let's not go down that road. So, look, we spent 45 minutes just talking about two coaching changes, but I think they are that you know, we go years covering this sport and not have two coaching changes as dramatic as those. And this carousel is not done spinning by any means. As of this recording, we still have openings at Virginia Tech, at obviously Notre Dame.
At Oklahoma. Right
now, at Oklahoma. I mean, think about all the school. If you go back to last year, right, you're going to have new coaches in a two-year span at Notre Dame, Oklahoma, USC, LSU, Texas changed coaches last year.
Florida changed coaches.
Florida's changing coaches.
Washington has changed coaches.
Who's that?
Washington has changed coaches.
Yeah, I don't really put them in the same level as those others, but yes. Just the amount of blue bloods that are turning over coaches.
Auburn changed coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee changed coaches. I don't know if you consider them, you know, if you put them in the Washington category, but that's, those are all sizable entities.
As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We're still coming back with our emails episode later this week. We're burning the midnight oil for you guys to give you an extra episode tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time.